mentioned on a number of previous occasions that Shimshon Rafael Hirsch, both in his commentary on the Torah and also in his Sefer Chayrev, which is a work on the Tariag Mitzvahs, points out that people make a very common mistake. We're all aware that there is a concept of Torah Shebiksav, and there's also a concept of Torah Shebal Peh. Mistaken assumption that people make is that Torah Shebiksav is the Ikka and Torah Shebal Peh is secondary. The assumption that's commonly made is that Torah Shebiksav is what Moshe Rabbeinu received when he was Ola Hashemaimo to receive Torah, and Torah Shebal Peh is no more than the extrapolation of Chazal as to how to interpret Torah Shebiksav. In reality, however, it's the other way around. Torah Shebal Peh is the Ikka. When Moshe Rabbeinu was Ola Hashemaimo, what the Ribbono Shel Olam gave him was the entirety of Torah Shebal Peh. And initially, the system was meant to be that Torah Shebal Peh should be studied Bal Peh. The Torah Shebal Peh should be learnt Bal Peh. But because the quantity of Torah Shebal Peh was so great that it is difficult for a person to memorize the entirety of Torah Shebal Peh, therefore the Ribbono Shel Olam did a chesed with Am Yisrael, and he gave to Am Yisrael a shorthand version of Torah Shebal Peh, which is Torah Shebiksav, namely the Chamisha Chumshei Torah. And the Chamisha Chumshei Torah are no more than a shorthand version of the entirety of the huge oral lecture that Ribbono Shel Olam gave to Moshe Rabbeinu Bashamayim, which consisted of the entirety of Torah Shebal Peh as we know it. However, because Torah Shebiksav is no more than a synopsis of Torah Shebal Peh, it's no more than a shorthand version of Torah Shebal Peh, therefore, it's not understandable unless one knows the shorthand system. Shimshon Rafael Hirsch uses the mashal of a medical student who missed a lecture on the human heart and asked his friend as to who had heard the lecture if he could borrow his notes. And the lecture was a 3-hour lecture, and the guy gives him one side of paper which has a lot of squares and triangles and circles and all sorts of strange squiggles. To which he turns around to his friend and he says to his friend, "You're off your mind. I asked you for a lecture on the human heart. You give me this piece of paper with a lot of scribbling on it." And the guy says to him, "No, this is the lecture. It's just I write in Pittman's shorthand, and you don't know the system of Pittman's shorthand. But if you knew the system, you'd understand that the circle represents this idea, and the square represents this idea, and the triangle represents this idea, and this sign represents this, and that sign represents that." Chazal did not learn out tilei tilim of halachas from an extra letter in the Torah. They didn't extrapolate tilei tilim of halachas from an extra letter in the Torah. The extra letter in the Torah is the shorthand symbol for those tilei tilim shel halachas. Therefore, Chazal say, Torah shebiksav is makatzer to the maximum. Torah shebiksav is the ultimate in brevity. Torah shebiksav doesn't use any superfluous words. Torah shebiksav doesn't waste words. Because Teresh B'Ksav, as we said, is simply a synopsis of Teresh Bal Peh. And yet in this week's Parsha, we find a Pasuk which, Licha'ura, is the Torah telling us a piece of information which, seemingly at first glance, is totally irrelevant and has no meaning for us whatsoever, and is therefore superfluous, and yet, as we know, the Torah doesn't use superfluous words. Moshe Rabbeinu is a shepherd. He's a shepherd who works for his father-in-law. He's a shepherd who's looking after the sheep of his father-in-law. And the Torah tells us that Moshe Hayaraya es sein Yisrael chaisnoi kayin midyon. Moshe was shepherding the sheep of his father-in-law Yisrael, who also happened to be the priest of Midian. Vayinhag es hatzoin achar hamidbo. And he guided the sheep very far into the midbo. Vayovoy el har ha'elikim chayrevo. And he came to a place which was har ha'elikim, which was in the direction of chayrev. Vayeiro malach Hashem elov. And a malach Hashem appears to him, belabas eish, in a blaze of fire, mitoich hasneh, inside a snare, vayar, and Moshe sees, vehine, what a strange phenomena, hasneh boyer boeish, the snare is burning, it's on fire. The hasneh einenu ukol. But the snare is not being consumed by the fire, even though the nature of fire is that it consumes that which is being used as its fuel to keep it burning. Vayomer Moshe, and Moshe says, Osuro no ve'ere es hamare hagodol hazeh. Let me turn around. Targum ben Yenison ben Uziel translates Osuro no, let me turn my head. Let me examine es hamare hagodol hazeh, this strange sight. Madua lo yivhar asneh. Why is the snare not burning? Lichura, this pasuk is totally irrelevant. Moshe is walking with the sheep towards the desert, or far into the desert. There's a snare which is burning, and it's not being consumed with the fire. Fine. That's all we have to know. We don't have to know more than that. Then, Vayara Hashem kiso lirois vayikra elo velikim mitech hasneh. And then God speaks to him from the snare. Fine, that's all we have to know. Why is the Torah bother telling us Vayomer Moshe that Moshe said Asuro nova era es hamare hagodel hazeh madua lo yivhar hasneh? And the pasuk doesn't tell us who Moshe Rabbeinu said this to. And Chazal asked this in the Medrash.
And Chazal the Medrash asked, who was Moshe Rabbeinu talking to? It just says, Vayomer Moshe. Say Chazal, maybe he was talking to the other shepherds that were with him. But the Poshet Pshat in the Pasuk, without Chazal, Vayomer Moshe Asura Novera, Moshe Rabbeinu was talking to himself. These are the Hirhurei Liboy of Moshe Rabbeinu. This is what was going through Moshe Rabbeinu's mind. And in fact, a lot of the English translations translate not Vayomer Moshe, Moshe said, but Vayomer Moshe, Moshe thought. Because this is the Pashat of Pshat. The Pashat of Pshat is that Moshe Rabbeinu was talking to himself. He said to himself, hey, what's this? What's going on here? But then the Pasuk says, immediately after that, Vayar Hashem Kisol Yirois, that when the Ribbono Shelam saw that Moshe Rabbeinu turned aside to look at the snare, Vayikra Elo Velikim Yitech HaSnare, then God spoke to him. Mashma, had Moshe Rabbeinu not turned aside to look at the snare, then the Ribbono Shelam wouldn't have spoken to him. And then Moshe Rabbeinu wouldn't have been appointed as the Manig of Klal Yisrael and as the Goyal Rishon. Why? What's the connection between the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu says to himself, Asura Nova Ere, and that Moshe Rabbeinu, as an outcome of that, is spoken to by the Malach, who B'Shem Hashem appoints him as the Goel Rishon to be Goel Klal Yisrael from Mitzrayim. And Bechlol, why do we have to know that Moshe Rabbeinu, that what went through Moshe Rabbeinu's mind was Asura Nova Ere? In Parshas Vayigash, we find a description of the clash, the debate, the argument, the confrontation between Yehuda and Yosef, even though Yehuda doesn't know that it's Yosef. All that Yehuda knows is that it's the Mishnah Lamelech of Pare. And the Medrash says, on the Pasuk of Yehuda approaching Yosef, Ra'ada Ochza es Ashvotim lehis'arev, that the other brothers started trembling and they backed off. And they weren't willing to get involved in this confrontation that was going on between Yehuda and Yosef. And Chazal in the Medrash Rabbah continue and say that the brothers said to each other, Melochim medayanim elu im elu. These are kings. These are malachim who are confronting one another. Anu ma ichpas lonu. Who are we to get involved in this argument? Now, in reality, in truth, neither Yehuda nor Yosef were malachim. Yosef definitely wasn't a melech. He was a Mishnah Lamelech. He was a important official in the Egyptian Empire. He was second to Paroi as Mishnah Lamelech. He was a Sar Godel V'choshev, but he wasn't a Melech. Paroi gave him away everything, except for one thing. You can have my chariot, you can have my medallion or whatever it was, you can have this, you can have that, you can have everything, but I'm the king. So Yosef definitely wasn't the melech. Yehuda also wasn't the melech. Even if Yehuda had some type of unique standing amongst the other brothers, Chazal tell us that was only until Mechiras Yosef. But at the time of Mechiras Yosef, Yorad Yehuda Migadlusoi. Yehuda was demoted
from that stature, that standing that he had. So neither Yehuda nor Yosef were Melochim. So what did the brothers mean when the brothers said, Melochim is dainim eluim elum lonu onu ma'ichpas lonu? But obviously, the Melochim weren't, the brothers weren't referring, and Chazal are not referring, to Melochim in the literal sense. Obviously, Chazal are not referring to a king in the sense of somebody who rules a nation, somebody who has an administration, somebody who has officers, somebody who has officials, somebody who has a state, somebody who has a people who are underneath him, who are under his rule. Melech, obviously, in this context, is talking about a certain type of personality. And the best way that Chazal found to describe the type of personality that Yehuda was and that Yosef was to say this is a personality of a melech. This is malchus at its best, in its true meaning. Because the definition of malchus in the eyes of Chazal is not the position that a person fills by choice of others or because it's hereditary. Malchus is a certain type of person. The nature of most people is not to be independent thinkers. The nature of most people is that their thinking process and their behavioral pattern is interdependent upon the environment and the society which exists around them. It is the nature of a person to be mushpa from the society that he's in. It is the nature of a person to give in to what is considered to be the norm of the society that exists around him. It is very difficult for a person to be independent. It is very difficult for a person not to be mushpa from the society around him, but to be mashpia on the society around him. There was a very great Jew in England who was a very highly respected Rav of a very large community. He was the head of the Vada Hatzalah in England during the war. And this man single-handedly saved thousands and thousands and thousands of lives. First of all, he had contacts in the British Home Office and therefore was able to get a lot of British passports. Also, he stole a tremendous amount of British passports from the Home Office. Pshuto kimashmo, he stole hundreds and hundreds of blank passports. He then travelled to Europe as the war was breaking out and used these passports to get huge transports of kids out of Europe. And I knew him. And I once said to him, let me write the history of your work during the war. Let me write your biography. And he looked at me and he said, young man, your job is not to write history, your job is to make history. The job of a person is not to be a mushpa. The job of a person is to be a mashpia. But the only type of individual who has to be, who has the ability to be a mashpia, the only type of individual who can have an impact on the society around him, is the type of individual who is not influenced by the society around him. And the only way that a person can survive not to be influenced by the society around him is if he has total control over his actions and his thoughts. Every individual has a tremendous amount of koichas and a tremendous amount of emotions. They exist within the person by nature. They, per se, in and of themselves, want to be effective. They want to produce. They want to do something. But it's up to the person to be able to guide them and to be able to control them and to be able to use them for the objective which the Ribbono Shel Olam wants that he should use them for, and not allow them to be guided by outside factors like environment and society. And somebody who can do that is given the title by Chazal of Melech. Chazal say, it's a Gemara in the Dorim, on Daf Lamed Beis, that Avram Avinu's original name was Avram, which is the Gematria of 243. When the Ribbono Shel Olam changed the name of Avram to Avraham, the Gematria became 248. Say Chazal, originally Avraham was only Avram. He only had total control over 243 of his Evorim. When he gained control over all 248 Evorim, then the Ribbono Shel Olam gave him the name Avraham. Then he reached Malchus. Which is why the Gemara says in Gittin that man malchei rabbonon, who are malochim? Those people who reach the darga of rabbonon, who reach the darga of total control, both over their emotions and over their actions. Chazal say that everything that Paray did on behalf of Yosef was not a schar min hashamayim, but it was a natural outcome. Omar Reb Shimon ben Gamliel, Yosef misheloi nosnuloi. Yosef only got from Paray which was that which was his. Say Chazal, what do we mean? Piv, shelo noshak bi'aveiro. Because his piv wasn't nichshel in aveiro with Eishes Potiphera, therefore, Paray said, al picho yishak kol dovo. Gufoi, say Chazal, shelo noga bi'aveiro, therefore, vayil basha yisei bigdei sheish. Savoroi, shalai hirkin al aveiro, vayosem revidazov al savoroi. Yodov shalai moshishu be aveiro, vayosar amelech tabasa be al yodei, venosanois al yad Yosef. Raglov shalai posu be aveiro. That's why vayarki vayosei, v'merkevus ha-mishna shalai. Machshova shalai choshu be aveiro. That's why he was called Avreich av b'chochmo v'rach b'shonim. These are natural outcomes. Say Chazal, even Paray realized it. Here is a person who is in total control over himself. The individual who is in total control over himself, he is the Mishnah Melech. He is the Melech. one of the most difficult areas for a person to have total self-control over himself is in the area of admitting a mistake. Because the internal egoism that exists within every person doesn't allow him to admit that he was wrong. Person always feels that if he admits that he's wrong, he's somehow being mevater on his kovod. If Yehuda was able, as an immediate response, to be moida in the story with Tamar, that he was wrong, he was able to be mashpil his kovod, that shows that he has total control over everything. Because that's the most difficult thing to control. And therefore he is considered to be a melech. Therefore when Yosef meets Yehuda, it's melochim, mizdainim, elu, im elu, and the other brother said, we're not holding that. We're not that madrega that we can get involved. Why is it that a person has it so difficult to control his emotions, to control his thoughts, to control his actions? I think that if every one of us sitting here would analyze, take a week, take the last week, and analyze what they did during the course of the week, the actions that they did during the course of the week, we'll find that 99.9% of the actions that we do are based on one of two criteria. One criteria is instinctive responses. Totally thoughtless, just automatic instinctive responses. Somebody does something, we instinctively respond to it. Try it once. The guy sitting by Gemara learning, walk up to him, put away his Gemara all of a sudden. What's the first thing that he does? Why? Maybe the Gemara is electrified, and if you touch the Gemara, you will die. And that's why the guy pulled it away from you. So why are you grabbing it? Don't grab it. If you grab it, you'll die. Because we don't think. Because we work on instinctive response. Most of the things we say are instinctive responses to what somebody else says. Not because we thought out that this is the correct thing to say at the correct point in time as a response to the other guy. No, if he says this, I say that. That's criteria number one. Criteria number two is what the Israelis call im kfar az kfar. Guy disappears for 6 hours. He leaves the yeshiva at 9. Comes back at 3 in the afternoon. Where were you? I went to the makolet. You went to the makolet? Well, the makolet is exactly 3 minutes walk away. So let's assume you spend 6 minutes in the makolet. Took you 3 minutes to get there, 3 minutes to get back. That's a sum total of 12 minutes. How come that you were away for 6 hours? No, I went to the makolet. If I was ready by the makolet, I'm next to the bus stop. If I'm next to the bus stop, I might as well take a bus. If I'm taking a bus, I might as well go to Gula. If I'm in Gula, I might as well go and eat. If I might as well go and eat, I might as well go and see my third cousin, quote, unquote, who happens to be in some girl's seminary somewhere here in Yerushalayim. In other words, everything is by the way. Right? Classic story, your wife leaves the house. I'm going out 20 minutes to buy something. She She comes back 3 days later. Where did you disappear to? I went to buy something. Yeah, you told me you went to buy something. You said it was going to take 20 minutes. Yeah, but if I was already there in the store next door, there was a sale. And if there was a sale, I already bought this. But then I realized I had no cash. So therefore, I went to the cashier to get cash out. And then the cashier swatted up my credit card. So I had to go down to the bank to find out why the credit card... It took me 3 days to get back. And the husband's no better. I'm going to the yeshiva for 20 minutes. 7 hours later, you get back. You said you were going for 20 minutes. I was there for 20 minutes. I was there for less. But as I was walking out, I met so-and-so. I haven't seen him for 40 years. We got into a conversation about something which happened 38 years ago. We argued about it, and then we had to go and find out from somebody else whether his version was right, whether my version was right. Everything is... Nothing is the outcome of actually thinking things through until the end. In the Torah, you see, you can have a guy by the name of Cain, who reached such an understanding of things that of his own accord, and the Ramban says this, not me, of his own accord, he achieved an understanding of the whole concept of Korbanos. He worked it out by himself. Do you know what you have to be able to work out all the siders of Korbanos? And you're in accord without it even appearing in anywhere. You never saw it before. You came up with this whole musag. And then the Ribbono Shel Olam doesn't accept his korban, but accepts his brother's korban. So the Torah says, Vahi b'yesem basodeh, Vayokam kayin al hevel achiv. Cain goes out to kill his brother Hevel. Say Chazal, what did Hevel say? Targum Yunusim ben Uzil brings it on the pasuk. The minute the Ribbono Shel Olam accepted Hevel's korban and didn't accept Cain's korban, Cain turns around and says, "Less din, less dain. Yes, bayir elam. There's no schar. There's no einish. There's no elam abad. There's no elam azel. There's nothing. I don't believe." Just before that, you got to the darga of understanding Korbanos on your own. But then something didn't go according to plan. So what's the response? Instinctive. There's no God. Is there any thought in that? I mean, all you have to do is think for a moment, why is it that my Korban wasn't accepted and God and Hevel's Korban was accepted? He didn't even get that far. He never got so far as to ask himself the question, why is it that my korban wasn't accepted and Hevel's korban was? No. He's got this instinctive reaction. There is no God. I don't believe in it all. The whole thing's a phony baloney. Finished. There's a parasha in the Torah of the Megadeth. The guy who cursed God. Say Chazal. Vayotzo ben Isha Yisraelis, and he cursed. Say Chazal, where did he go out from? Say Chazal, his mother was Jewish, his father wasn't. So halachically, he's a Jew. Moshe Rabbeinu was organized the Machne of Klal Yisrael according to tribes. His mother's from Don. So he goes to the area which was given to Don and he pitches his tent. So his neighbors come to him and say, what are you doing here? He says, what do you mean I'm doing here? I'm from Don. They say, you're not from Don. In order to be a member of the tribe of Don, your father has to be from Don. Your father wasn't even Jewish. So he says to them, who says? Maybe it's enough that my mother's from Don? So they don't know what to do. So they say, you know what, let's go to the interior to Moshe Rabbeinu. They go to Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu says, they're right, you're wrong. In order to be from Shevet Don, the father has to be from Shevet Don. What does the guy do? Walks out of Moshe Rabbeinu's Bezdin, And he's cursing God. There is no God. I don't believe. The whole story is phony baloney. Idiot. Think for a moment. So Mercedes, you're not from Shaved Dunn. So what should he have done? If he would have thought for 30 seconds, what should he have done? Turn around to Moshe Rabbeinu and say to Moshe Rabbeinu, okay, fine. Now, am I meant to be the first homeless in the world that I have to live under a bridge? Or where am I meant to go? So you tell me, but you're the Dayan, you're the Avbezdin, you're the Malik of Klal Yisrael, Beseder, Nishdos, find me somewhere else. Or where am I meant to go? Obviously, there was somewhere for him to be. And Moshe Rabbeinu would have told him. No, instinctive gut reaction. Didn't go my way, but doesn't exist. A person has to calculate. A person has to think. A person has to work out to himself before he responds, what is what's the correct process here? Let me tell you two stories. One false, one true. My story is what my father-in-law used to say always. He used to say that a guy got on a train in Warsaw. He's traveling to Vilna. The old style trains where there were carriages and corridor. He went down the corridor, goes down the corridor, he opens up the doors, full of Goyim peasants. Terrible, terrible crowd there. Finally, he reaches one carriage. He has a look inside. There's one Jew sitting there with a Gemara learning. I'm a chayah. He opens up the door, goes into the carriage, puts his luggage away, sits down, looks at the Jew opposite him, who's looking on a sefer, and he says to him, Shalom Aleichem, from Vanekum Tayyid. Shalom Aleichem, where are you from? The Jew looks up from his Gemara, looks at him, and says, no way, not in a million years, don't even think about it. It doesn't come into question. So he looks at the Jew, he says to him, you've gone off your mind. He says, all I asked you is where you're from. To which the Jew looks at him and says to him, I know. He says, but let me tell you how this conversation is going to go. You're going to say to me from Vanikum to Yid, and I'm going to say to you, I come from Warsaw. And you're going to say to me from Warsaw, where do you come from in Warsaw? And I'm going to say to you from Gebelnia Strasse, that I come from this and this street. And you're going to say to me, really? You come from that and that street? Now, my mother-in-law, she has a cousin. Now, this cousin got married for a third time to a guy who's divorced twice, but his original wife, the first one that he married, she lives on Gabernia Street. Do you know her? What's her name? Goldberg. Yeah, of course I know Goldberg. He says, it's not going to take 20 minutes of conversation when before you turn around and say, perhaps you can loan me $5,000. So I just cut out the whole middle. I just gave you the response to the end of the conversation. It doesn't come into question. No way. Forget about it. Okay. But there's a method. There's a message here. In other words, make a cheshbon before you respond. Work it out. Let me tell you a true story. This is about 30-something years ago. I get a phone call from an acquaintance of mine, a friend, who is a Rosh Yeshiva in America in a yeshiva, in a pretty well-known yeshiva. And he phones me up and he says to me, can you do me a favor? Can you go to Rav Eliashiv on my behalf to ask a shaila? So I said, sure, because in those days Rav Eliashiv, every day used to answer shailas from I think 7 to 8.30 or 7 to 8. In his house, and anybody wanted, waited in the queue, and he went in. And in those days, I used to go a lot. I was a young man, I had a lot of shaylos. I used to go and ask him. He was just one of the people he went and asked. It wasn't Rav Eliashiv of later years. It was a place that people went to ask shaylos to. So he says, my shaylos is the following. I have a bocha learning in the yeshiva who is an androgynous. Now, an androgynous means that you have the simonim of a zocher and you have the simonim of an akeva. They made surgery, they removed the simonim of an akeva, and he now has the simonim only of a zocher. He has the ability to lead a normal married life, but he can't have children. So he got engaged to a girl who was sick. She had cancer of the womb. They had to remove her womb, and therefore she can't have children either. So it was. So what's the problem? The problem is the following. That there's a suffix in the Gemara as to whether the halachic category of an androgynist is that of a male or that of a female, which therefore means that the kiddushin of an androgynous is a suffix kiddushin, which therefore means that you're running into a problem as to whether you're allowed to make birchas ha'iris and birchas nisuin by the chuppah of an androgynous, because we don't know whether it is a kiddushin nisuin or not. Rav Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva whereby he says that this doesn't present a problem because you can get out of it very simply by walking under the chuppah, whoever's being Masadik Kedushin, with a Rambam. Saying under your breath, the Rambam paskins that at a chuppah these are the brachas which have to be made, and then open up your Rambam and read out the brachas as they appear in the Rambam, and you've solved the problem. However, he says to me, I can't do this because we're talking about yeshiva, we're talking about Talmid HaChacham, and people are going to chap what's going on. So I'm not quite sure what to do. So I said, fine, I'll go to Rav Eliashiv, it's not a problem. However, I didn't want to really go into Rav Eliashiv and ask him the Shaila, looking very stupid, just in case he asked me something and I wouldn't know what it was. So I did what is a shortcut in these circumstances. There is an encyclopedia on Shulchan Aruch Evan Ezra, which brings down every single tshuva that exists on every single sa'if in Evan Ezra. It's called Eishra Poskim. I think they've covered so far about 40 simonim, and they're holding by volume 60 or something. But they do have on this. So I looked it up. And there it is, right in front of me. It says that the Nadi Behuda in Simon Aleph Evan Oezer says X. And that the Evan Oezer, who I had no idea who he is, argues with the Nadi Behuda and says Y. So at least I know there's two opinions. You do make the brachos, you don't make the brachos, I don't. Sounds stupid, so now I'm the world's greatest expert on androgynous and kiddushin. And off I went to Rav Eliashiv. I walked in there, waited in the queue, I walk in, I sit down, and he's sitting by the table, and next to him is a young man who today is a Rav in Monsey, by the name of Schneebog. He's a Chassidish Rav in Monsey, who at that time was in his 20s, and he was one of the, probably I think the only person who actually really did shimush by Rav Eliashiv. He sat by Rav Eliashiv for about 2.5 years, every single day, and every single shaila that Rav Eliashiv got, Rav Eliashiv used to talk it through with him. And Rav Eliashiv highly respected him. So I came in and I said to Rav Eliashiv, that a friend of mine called me from America with a shaila about an androgynous. And he looked at me and he said to me, do you know what an androgynous is? And I said, yes. He said, they really exist? And I said, yeah. He said, well, he said, sometimes you can learn something for 50 years, and you think it's theory, you don't think it's practice. So I said, well, actually, it happened in Yerushalayim about 14 years ago because there's a tshuva, thanks to the Eitzah Poskim, there's a tshuva in Sitz Eliezer of Rav Waldenberg, who was a friend of Rav Eliashiv's, sat in the Besdin with him, that discussed it. He said, really, I didn't know that. Okay, he says, what's the question? I said, the question is, I told him the question. Turns around to this guy, Schneebog, and he says to Schneebog, okay, what do you say? And I must admit, I was blown away because this guy says straight away on the spot, Nadi Behuda, Evan Ezra, Simon Aleph. Shut it back, straight away. So Rav Eliashiv says, yeah. Yeah. Then he looks at me. I said, what about the Evan Ezra? So Rav Eliashiv says to me, do you know who the Evan Ezra was? I said, no, I haven't got the faintest idea. So he says, huh, you looked in the Eitzah Poskim, huh? Took all the winds out of my sails. I said, yeah, well, I had a glance. So he says to himself in Yiddish, this is a problem. Could be a big michshul here. And then he says to me, it's a machlokes between the Nadi Behuda and the Evan Ezra. The Evan Ezra was a Hungarian Rav who was the expert on Kiddushin. He has the right, he said to me, to argue with the Nadi Behuda. In other words, he's not some guy just coming out of nowhere. He was chashuv enough to be able to argue with the Nadi Behuda. When it comes, he says, to inyonim of Kiddushin, because he was an expert on Kiddushin. I can't give you an answer. I have to go through the sugi again. Come back tomorrow night at 9 o'clock. I said, they're not going to let me in, because there was no way you could get in there other than the 7 to 8. So he said, no, don't worry about it. Ring the doorbell. My wife will answer the door. I'll tell her before and she'll open the door for you. She'll let you in. I said, fine. I come back the next day. I ring the doorbell, 9 o'clock. His wife opens the door. She says, no way, you can't see him. I said, the Rav Kay told me to come at 9 o'clock. She says, Andreganis? I said, not me. So she says, yeah, you're the guy with the shine about the Andreganis? I said, yeah. She says, come in. He told me, come in. I come in and I sit down. And Rav Yashu says to me, I went through the whole Inyan again. He says, those who say that you shouldn't make the brachas, in Lomdus they are right. However, I paskin, tell him that I paskin that you should make the brachas, you should make a normal, regular chuppah, like any other chuppah. So I said to him, Ilamdeinu Rabbeinu, you just told me, the people who say that you shouldn't make the brachas, they're right, Alpi Lomdus. So why are you now telling me that I should tell him that you paskin that you should make the brachas? So he says to me, do you know who my wife is? So I said, yes. He says, do you know who her father was? I said, yes, she's Rabbi Levine's daughter. He says, do you think she's a knowledgeable woman? I said, I assume so. He says, she's definitely a Bas Talmud Chacham, right? I said, yes. He said, your wife is a Bas Talmud Chacham. He knew who I was. He says, your wife's a Bas Talmud Chacham. I said, yes. He said, okay. He said, I want to tell you something. He said, what would happen if I walked into the kitchen now with you together and said to my wife, are we married? He says, what do you think would happen? I said, I don't know. He says, I'll tell you what happened. She'll look at me and she'll say to me, Yosef Shalom, are you crazy? And I'll say, no, why? Are we married? And she'll say, of course we're married. We got married in this place. The Masada condition was so-and-so. The first bracha so-and-so. I got the second bracha so-and-so. I got the caterer was so-and-so. He says, she'll tell me everything to prove that we're married, other than the correct answer. He says, and your wife as well. He says, try it, go home. Ask your wife, are we married? And if she says yes, ask her why. I actually did it. I came home, my wife was dealing with 6 kids at the time, trying to put them to bed. I said, are we married? She said, of course we're married. And then she made some comment, which I won't repeat. And I said, how do you know we're married? And she said, stop being stupid. We got married in the May Tel Aviv in Tel Aviv. Ramesh Chavreni was in Masada Kedushin. This is what she answered. So Rabbi Asher said to me, what should she answer? He says, she should answer. Of course we're married. You made a Kinyan Kesef with me. Oish and Niknis, because of Ishtar Mabir. Right? He says, so what she should say is, there were 2 witnesses when you made a Kinyan Kesef with me. You gave me a tabas and you said, Hariat Mekudesh, Zibit Tabasu. That's why we're married. He said, there's not a woman in the world who will answer that. Not a woman in the world who will ever answer that. Because that's not the way women think. Now, he says, it doesn't exist in the world a couple that don't get into a huge fight immediately after the wedding. If it's a really good marriage, it's the day after the Shavuot Brachos. Otherwise, it's the day after the Chasana. He says, now, you're talking about an American girl who's going to get into a fight with her husband, and you're not going to make a normal chuppah. He says, what's she going to say to herself? What the heck with it? I'm not really married to the guy anyway. There's a rabbis here made some sort of phony baloney ceremony, but it's not real because all my friends had a different type of chuppah completely. So he says, if the woman thinks she's not really married and she's all alone with her husband, who knows what she's going to get up to? Do you realize what a michshel can come out of this? Therefore, even though I'll be longest, the brachas should be said, I paskin, the brachas should be said. At which point I suddenly chapped that that's what he said when I initially asked him the shaila. That's what he muttered under his breath. When I asked him the shaila the day before, what was his response? He heard the story and he said, oy vey, a tremendous michshel can come out of this. In other words, he'd cheshbin it all out already. Now the shaila was, what do we do halachically? He went and had a look, saw that halachically one should really not say the brachas, and yet still made the decision because of his cheshbon of what could feasibly be the outcome that you do make the brachas. Because that's the kerech ha-psak of a posek. But he made the cheshbon, he didn't answer, he didn't respond instinctively. If you look in the introduction to Leiv Eliyahu, where there's a biography of Rabbi Elia, there's a story there. It doesn't say who the person who told the story was. It was actually the son of Rav Shalom Shvadron, Rav Yitzchok Shvadron. He was a bocher, learning in Kfar Chassidim Yeshiva. He accompanied Rabbi Elia once when Rabbi Elia had to have an eye operation and was told to be at the hospital by 3 o'clock. Rabbi Elia left the house at 2 o'clock in order to get there in time and waited by the bus stop. There was a huge line of people waiting at the bus stop and the bus wasn't coming. And everybody was standing there looking in the direction where the bus was coming from. Everybody kept on turning around to see whether the bus is coming. Rabbi Elia was a kelmer. He didn't move. He didn't move. And then all of a sudden Rabbi Elia lost his patience and he also turned around to have a look if the bus was coming. And then he slapped himself on the shoulder and he turned around to the bocher and he said to the bocher, and he started shaking. And he said to the bocher, in Kelm, I would have got a tremendous telling off for doing that. That was a wasted move. What is the point of turning around to see that the bus is coming? It's not going to come any quicker if I turn around to look. Therefore, I was turning my head for no reason at all. Doing an action without any thought behind it deserves teichocha. That's what they taught us in Kelm. The Ribbono Shel Olam creates a bush which burns, but the bush doesn't get consumed by the fire. And Moshe Rabbeinu notices this. And Moshe Rabbeinu has an internal debate. Should I go and have a look? Or shouldn't I go and have a look? Is there a point in having a look? Or is there no point in having a look? And for what reason it may be, which we don't know, Moshe Rabbeinu comes to a conclusion. And that conclusion is recorded in the Torah. Vayomer Moshe Rabbeinu says, Asura no vera. My conclusion is that I should go and have a look. Says the Ribbono Shel Olam, Vayar ki so lirois, when the Ribbono Shel Olam sees, the Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't react instinctively. He thinks things through before he does something. The Ribbono Shel Olam says, he's got the middah of Malchus. He's got the middah of Anhoga. He's got the middah of being able to be the Goel Rishon, to be able to be the Manig of Klal Yisrael. And that's why the Torah tells us this. This pasuk represents the Anhoga of Moshe Rabbeinu. The way in which Moshe Rabbeinu led his life prior to becoming Moshe Rabbeinu. As a shepherd, you don't do anything without thinking through. Is it necessary? Isn't it necessary? And what can be the repercussions? Time and time again, we get ourselves into a mess. Why? Because we don't think things through. Everything is instinctive reactions. Everything is im kvar az kvar. If somebody's already going away, let's get drunk. What are going to be the repercussions? Can I hold my liquor? Can I hold my liquor? The law against drinking by some guys is set until the age of 85, not until the age of 18. Because they simply can't hold their liquor. If you can't hold your liquor, don't drink. No, because nobody thinks. Everything's instinctive reactions. If already, I might as well. If we stop to pause for a moment, before anything that we did, we worked out the repercussions. If we were always 10 stages ahead, if I go to bed at this and this time, then I'm not going to be able to get up, then I'm not going to be able to learn, therefore now I have to do this, then we would never get into any problems. Our problems always start because we don't think. And that's what the Torah is telling us.